Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
One of my favorite guests on the Disruption Zone is Christian Toto. He has a website called Hollywood in Toto. He is a nationally known critic of the media. And he gets into movie reviews, but also just media in general, and has a lot of really interesting takes on what's happening. And if you want to go to his website, it's hollywoodintoto.com, and you can see all kinds of really cool reviews of movies that are out. And he's not just a guy that's like, I'm going to give you the stock right-wing answer to everything that's out there. He dives into the intellectual parts of what's going on in a piece of film and a piece of art, and then comes at it from kind of a conservative point of view. It's a fascinating website, and if you want a non-canned, stereotypical left-wing outtake on what's going on in the media, this is your place. I have it on my favorites, hollywoodintoto.com. Welcome back, Christian. How are you?
I'm good. Wow, it's a very kind reception. I appreciate it.
All of it true. I made nothing up. So it's good to have you back. I wanted to talk about a couple of things in the media today. First, I definitely want to hit the Tara Reid accusations against Joe Biden and the hypocrisy with the way the left and the Hollywood celebrities are handling that. But I kind of wanted to start off with a bit of a social media diatribe. And that is, I've been in this discussion back and forth, Christian, with some friends of mine about where social media's role in society comes in with the censoring of opinions. And, you know, we had this video that had been on YouTube and it had been posted on some other social media websites of these two doctors. It was an in-depth discussion that went on for about an hour. These two doctors in California, and they were talking about data that they were seeing that backed up what a Stanford Nobel Prize winning scientist was saying about the reaction to the coronavirus, and that essentially we overreacted by locking everything down, that the damage being done to the economy is going to be, in terms of lives, is going to be far worse than the virus is. And they were sharing their opinion from the anecdotal evidence that they have seen. Those social media sites took that down. And this is part of an effort that's going on amongst all social media that, you know, they're shutting down websites or pages that are promoting protests against the lockdown. They're shutting down weird opinions that don't line up maybe with the status quo out there. And it's a dangerous time because at one point, social media was sort of the sunlight and the disinfectant to the conglomerate of the left-wing mainstream media. And now it seems as though the two are in league, and there is no place for alternative points of view to go.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. And here's the bottom line with what's going on in the country right now. In many ways, we don't know. I mean, the scientists, I mean, the both of us, we just don't know. Masks were bad, and now they're good. We shouldn't go outside, now we should go outside. There's so much evolving information out there, and we're all doing the very best we can to educate ourselves and behave the right way and to kind of keep us safe and healthy. But if you start blocking some information, well, then maybe we can't stay safe and healthy. What if these two doctors, which you mentioned, are right, and all of a sudden we can't hear their opinion? Who is to say, why is YouTube the arbiter of this? And while there are YouTube competitors, it is the, 800-pound gorilla? It runs video in our digital lives. There's no question about that. And so if you block it from YouTube, you're basically saying 80, 90% of the people will not be able to see it. We don't know. We need more information. It's certainly more clear cut if I put a video on YouTube tomorrow and I say, well, you know, if you gargle with the hydrochloric acid, you'll be healthy in a month.
Right.
I mean, there's buffoonish information. And I think almost everyone on the planet would say, yeah, we're okay with a platform, you know, negating that. But when you get into the shades of gray and when you get into things we just don't know enough about, it's kind of creepy. And by the way, they're saying you can't protest the government about the decisions. Well, what about protests against ICE? And what about protests against for or con sanctuary cities? there are so many things where we are allowed to protest, where we should protest, where there should be a healthy debate. Why is this suddenly not up for debate? And why does it align with the same voices in the media, in the government? It's there's so much going on here that's wrong. And I wish more people were speaking out. This is a real big problem.
Yeah, I mean, let's play a thought experiment. Let's say Joe Biden was a Republican and he was getting ready to run against a sitting Democrat, and the Tara Reid accusations came out. And in the midst of this pandemic, there was a women's march. How do you think the mainstream media and social media would handle promotions of that march on their platform?
No, it would go on unencumbered.
Right.
There's no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, and we're going to talk about the Tara Reid stuff a little bit later, but I mean, it's just, I think people, it's like the elephant in the room. And I lean libertarian. Nine times out of 10, I'm going to be like very reticent to ever say, you know, the government should step in there, because most of the time you'll find me arguing the absolute opposite. And I don't even know that government is the answer in this case. But, you know, I had Senator Rand Paul on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and him and I share a lot of political views. I asked him about this issue. I asked him about Facebook shutting down dissenting opinion on the virus. And he said, well, you know, we should use other platforms. And he mentioned some platform that he uses. I can't remember what it was. But the problem with that is that, as I said, those organizations, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, and the media will band together. There have been several sort of competitions that have popped up. And when they have, naturally, some extremists graduate to that place because they've been kicked off of Facebook and YouTube, right? But then that scares away any normal person from going to that platform because that they've been branded an extremist. Nobody wants to be called a white supremacist because they want to go somewhere and just speak their view about protests, you know, and it just doesn't have the reach. So I've kind of come to the conclusion that social media, at least in terms of Facebook and Twitter, YouTube, those have become sort of like public utilities in terms of their reach and their use for business and commerce and everything else. And as a result of that, you know, can you imagine, Christian, if, say, the electric company could say to your business, you might be a legal business, but you know what? We don't like what you sell. We're going to turn your power off. You know what I mean? Like, nobody would stand for that.
Yeah, interesting point. I agree with what you're saying. I think it's very complicated. I'm like you, I'm hesitant to kind of give that, you know, power to the government because, you know, the right now the Democrats are anti-free speech in many ways. It's a chilling thought, and I don't say it lightly, but we can see it across the platforms. So I don't know. What I'd like to see in the short term is someone with immense power teaming up with a truly free platform.
Right.
There's one called CloudHub, which claims to be as sort of as neutral as possible. You can put what you want on there. I'm sure there are some restrictions, but their marketing is, we are not YouTube. We're not going to do that to you.
Right.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if Donald Trump tomorrow on Twitter said, I want every one of my followers to go to CloudHub and see that, you know, that banned video.
Yeah.
I think that's a temporary solution. It's also possible then CloudHub will come under so much fire, they'll have to,
right,
you know, repeat the mistakes of other people. But to me, you know, listen, I cover Hollywood. I'm a conservative. You know, I vote a certain way. My big issue, and it's becoming bigger by the minute, is free speech, free debate, free expression. And it's even more important right now. And we're seeing articles in The Atlantic saying, you know what? I think China's got it right when it comes to expression. Can you imagine that? Flashback 20, 30 years. Can you imagine a left-leaning outlet making a statement? It's outrageous.
Yeah.
And you know what? Free speech is scary. And there are problems that come about that. But that's our culture. That's our society. That's the strength of who we are. And yes, there will be problems there. There will be people who see a crazy, like a Taxi Driver movie, and then do something horrible. That is sadly the sort of the downside of our free and open society. But I think the pluses are so much more important, so much more staggering, and how they help us, that you can't go down that road.
Well, our founders understood that importance of protecting extreme speech, even if we didn't agree with it. And I think what we've lost in America today is the ability to, we don't have the ability to think critically anymore, it seems. And so we hear something that offends us and we want it to stop, as opposed to recognizing the importance of, you know, there's a lot of people with whom I virulently disagree, but I'll fight for their right to say what they say, if for no other reason than I want to know where the idiots are, you know, and there's value in knowing where the idiots are. You know, somebody on my Facebook says something stupid, I know who the idiots are, you know.
And also, if I'm offended right now, maybe I need to think about why I'm offended.
Right.
Is it just an poorly argued debate, or did maybe someone strike a nerve and I need to reassess what I'm thinking about?
Right.
And, you know, I think that's why the Dave Chappelle special from last year, Sticks and Stones, was so perfect.
Yeah.
Because he went back and forth. He bobbed. He weaved. He, you know, challenged us. He said things that were unconventional. And he made me think and rethink some of my existing philosophies. He challenged me. I shouldn't be offended by that. I should be buying him a beer.
Right.
Thank you, Dave, for making me, kind of putting me out of my comfort zone and making me reassess things. Gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful if more people did that?
Here's what I love about the way Dave Chappelle thinks. Not to chase a rabbit trail, but let's chase a rabbit trail. Because I think it ties into what we're saying here. That special was so great because I disagreed with and was uncomfortable with about 50 to 60% of the things that he said and did. And yet I was thoroughly entertained. And
yeah.
I walked away from that going, that is a gosh darn American hero. Because the things that he said that I disagreed with, the way he said it did exactly what you said a while ago. It challenged me to think about why I disagreed with it. And it challenged me to once again make sure I checked what I believed about it. Now, I went back and said, no, I still believe this, but it challenged me to think about why. And I'm like, that is an art form, and that's an art form you can only have when a guy like Dave Chappelle is comfortable getting in front of a group of people and saying something so outrageous that, you know, he's comfortable doing that and knowing he can still make a living doing it. You know, that only works in that setting.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, maybe it's not fair because it's a nightly monologue versus one particular special, which I'm sure he worked on quite a bit. But you think about it like a Stephen Colbert rant against, say, Donald Trump.
Right.
It's often poorly thought out. It's often sort of a knee-jerk reaction. It's often not funny.
Right.
But there's nothing about what he's saying that will make you think or provoke you. It's just very black and white, simple. I don't like him. Here's why I don't like him. Where the Dave Chappelle material was like, he wasn't doing that. He was
right.
Going deeper. He was actually being more inquisitive. He was, you know, taking things and looking at them from a different perspective. He was, you know, shaking the Etch-a-Sketch. And that's so much more valuable. And listen, I even Colbert can do what he does. I don't care.
Right.
But I just think as a comedian, as someone who's, I guess maybe you could say a culture warrior in a way. I just admire what Dave Chappelle does. And again, like you, I didn't agree with a lot of the stuff and a lot of it made me uncomfortable, but boy, the way I think he's inconsistent. I've seen other specials that didn't affect me that way.
Right.
But boy, he just hit home run after home run.
But that's the art of comedy too. That's the art of comedy, is that he's free to have 9 mess ups and
yep.
one unbelievable success that makes America think, you know?
Yeah. And also what a comedian does is he or she will workshop those jokes. He'll tell the joke, get a reaction. Maybe the next night he tells it a different way. It gets a different reaction. Maybe he retools it. Maybe he changes the words. Maybe he brings in a new metaphor. Along the way, it gets better and better and better. And often what we want to do is stop the comedian in his tracks, saying, you can't approach that subject. That's crazy. And you're taking away his craft. And again, at the end of the day, these are jokes.
Right.
He's not changing policy. He's just saying things. And if you can't stand that, then maybe this Western culture isn't for you.
You know what's interesting about what you just said? That is the value of free speech. You just encapsulated it. The way a comedian does a joke. As a comedian, they're looking for something specific. They're looking for laughs. And if they don't get laughs, they're not going to do the joke, right? So they hone it. They get in front of the audience and they say it. And it's raw. And the audience says, nope, not funny. They go back. Right. So you do this. That is the value of free speech, right? I've put things out on social media before that when the reaction was so overwhelmingly a certain way, it forced me to go back and rethink, wait, did I think that through? right? Mm-hmm. And then have to make the correction. So in other words, there was value in, you know, if your goal is to advance a ball or advance a conversation, you know, there's going to be some people that are just going to say stuff and they're going to just be overjoyed by being hated. But if you're truly trying to advance the ball in some way, your goal is to move the conversation forward. And when we shut down all free speech, I used to say that if you bring everybody together and sit them around a round table and tell everybody you can say anything you want except anything that's offensive to anybody here at the table, you'll have silence for an hour. You know what I mean? And that so you don't get anywhere with that. And you sort of describe why it's important that social media sites don't censor certain types of speech, because it hones that conversation. People will say, well, that guy's crazy. Or that guy will come back, delete the post, come back, write it better, think it through. Maybe an argument ensues. That's all part of tinkering with the public conversation. And it's like these big multi-billionaire college students haven't figured out yet, you know, that they can trust dialogue to develop as it goes. That dialogue gets worse and more tribalized the more they try to control it.
Yep, I agree. And our betters who think they know more than we do, they often don't. Yeah. And that's pretty darn scary. YouTube is sort of getting on its high horse and saying, well, if someone disagrees with the World Health Organization, we're going to, you know, clamp down on them. Well, that's the same group that said that they took the Chinese line right a few months ago and was a major factor in what we're dealing with right now. You mean you can't disagree with that group? Yeah. They're so august that you can't be critical? That's just antithetical to what we are.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about a couple other things, the Tara Reid accusations. There's some interesting things going on with that right now. Last night I read an article that she's now saying probably shouldn't, no need to dig through the documents in the senator's office because I didn't actually mention sexual assault in my filed complaint there, which I find interesting. But even without that, and I'm not saying one way or the other about her, what she's saying, I look at this and I look at what she has and the corroborators to her story, and I say, wow, there's a hell of a lot more there than there was with Kavanaugh. And yet I see the media literally doing everything they can to run as far away from that story as possible. This is kind of exactly what we talk about when we talk about double standards. I saw where Alyssa Milano, who's like open mouth, insert foot all the time because she doesn't seem to think through any of her political opinions, but she was right there sitting behind Kavanaugh. And, you know, that whole thing was like her banner for that whole period of time. And now she's like, yeah, I still support Biden. And I'm like, do you even see the hypocrisy in how you're approaching this? What drives Hollywood's ability to literally live life like that and not even know it? Like, how can they be so out of touch with their own selves and their own opinions?
Well, they don't get opposing points of view, for starters. Their community is very in lockstep. And if it isn't, if you're a gaffer on the next Alyssa Milano TV project, you're not going to go up to her and say, Miss Milano, you know, I heard you discussing this and I just want to share my thoughts. That's not going to happen. If you're an actress who has sort of right-leaning thoughts, you're not going to approach her. So she never gets that information. Also, she, you know, I'm sure if you look at her news feed, it's going to be HuffPo and Mother Jones, and there's going to be no National Review or the Federalist or the Daily Wire. So she's getting a very singular worldview through her cultural connections and also her media connections. Plus, the media, the reporters who cover these stories, they will not hold her accountable. The next time she gets an interview, no one's going to say, well, you know, it seems like a massive hypocritical switcheroo you've right done between right Kavanaugh and Biden, and then lay it out in very simple terms. She's not going to accept that interview, and she's not going to get that interview.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. There is no one to hold them accountable. It's why the media lies. It's why we're seeing what we're seeing. You know, there was a story, it might have been written by Spence, somebody said, gee, why aren't any media outlets interviewing Tara Reid? Boy, that's a real head scratcher. Right. I mean, can you imagine waking up and saying, I'm going to write that story because I just don't know the answer.
Right.
I mean, that level of ignorance is off the chart. And I guarantee the people asking that question aren't technically dumb. They're
right
not idiots.
Right.
They can put two and two together. But they're so immune to outside thought. It's really frightening. And what's amazing is that when you go on Twitter and these people spread these hypocrisies, and yet there's an avalanche of people saying, no, you're wrong. look at this. Like we're trying to educate them about their ignorance.
Right.
And it doesn't cut through. So either they're ignoring the mentions, they're ignoring the conversations, or they're so arrogant they won't even let the idea that they've handled the situation differently. It couldn't be more staggering. It couldn't be more obvious. And yet here we are.
Well, and I would argue the same way I did with Kavanaugh, and that is that I don't know if her accusations are right. They're 25, 30 years ago. What I know is that every standard that the left told me during the Kavanaugh hearings that I was supposed to use to determine whether to believe her or not has been met. Their standards, yep. Not mine. Because I say you're innocent until proven guilty. Bring me the evidence. And if you're complaining about it 30 years later, we might have a problem here. But if there's people that have come forward and said, yeah, she complained, she filed paperwork, and no one did anything about it, and now she doesn't want him to be president, okay, that makes a little more sense to me. But I still don't know. You know, I also see that Biden goes around sniffing women's hair. That's kind of creepy. That kind of lines up. But I don't know. You know what I mean? But according to the left, the standards that I'm supposed to, first of all, if she says it, I'm supposed to believe it. Second of all, if any of her friends say it, I'm supposed to believe it. And third of all, if any of her family or professional colleagues say it, I'm supposed to believe it. Well, she's met those standards. And of course, now we're starting to see the media can't really get away from it because there's so much overwhelming. You know, people are like, y'all hypocrites are much. But at the same time, it's like using their standards. He's guilty. No argument, right? And now they have to go. I was at Pelosi, I think, said the other day. She's like, well, maybe we sort of went a little overboard with that, right? Oh, now you say that, right? Okay, I get it. I don't know, man. It's I get frustrated because we're so tribal now anyway that I was thinking about this yesterday. I was like, no, in 9/11, the whole Congress got together and sang God Bless America on the steps right afterwards. This is the last time I saw our country really unified around a challenge or a crisis. I don't think we'll ever see that again. I think now it's like I look at my social media feed and it's one side or the other. Either you're for opening the business up or you hate people and you want them to die. And it's just so tribalized that it doesn't even matter the hypocrisy of it anymore. People just go straight to their camps.
Yeah, no, it is. And you like you said, you're not going to see that moment at least for a long time in our culture. I think if we were attacked tomorrow, I think it would be a left-right reaction. It would not be an American reaction. I think that's very clear. We're seeing with the pandemic right now. Trump has the blood of 60,000 people on his hands. Meanwhile, the entire world was ravaged by this. Is each of those leaders of those countries, do they have the blood? I mean, it's absurd, but it's where we are right now.
Yeah.
And another thing, you know, with getting back to the social media and deplatforming, this is why it matters. What if you and I went on Twitter tomorrow and said, boy, that Tara Reid media hypocrisy, it's off the charts, and they banned us.
Right.
We violated their nebulous terms of service. All of a sudden, those points of view are gone. Mm-hmm. You think that can't happen? Look right. What's happening right now. PragerU cranks out squeaky clean, pro-Christian, pro-conservative messages, and almost every one of the videos gets restricted
right.
So that kids can't watch them. There's no cussing. There's no nudity. There's nothing outrageous. It's a point of view that they don't like, and they want to stop it.
Yeah.
And if you think that stops, that they only restrict some points of view, and they're going to kind of draw a line in the sand, well, we won't go here. Oh, no. That's not the way it works.
Well,
and that's why I'm scared to death of Democrats taking power.
Yes.
Because they will sit back, and they will let that happen. And we're seeing it happen now with a Republican in the White House. Can you imagine with a Biden in the White House?
Yeah.
He's going to twiddle his thumbs while YouTube does more and more and more censorship, and the newspapers and the media outlets go, that's fine.
Yeah.
Should be.
I think you're dead on because I think, you know, the longer I don't think people originally it was just, well, extremists, white supremacists. OK. And nobody wants to defend those guys. You know what I mean? It's like when the government is wanting to spy on people's phones and Internet, it's like nobody wants to defend a pedophile. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like they sort of like, well, we're going to spy on people because we want to catch pedophiles. They pick the worst of the worst. And it's like, well, I don't really want to stand up for Internet freedom because I don't want to defend that guy. You know, well, we don't want to defend white supremacists. But then now that we're so tribalized, right, Now it's just one quick leap to say, oh, those doctors who have experience on the front line, screw them. They're going against the standard status quo. Now that's a whole leap forward from those social media outlets 2 years ago. Just, oh, we're just banning white supremacists because they're so hateful, right? Now we're banning doctors because, not because they're hateful or they're, you know, walking through the street with signs that say people should die, but rather because they're questioning a paradigm that has been set up and in place for a set of models that have clearly failed. So there are questions that must be asked in a rigorous intellectual discussion of what's going on with this, and they're now shutting that down. That's not extremism by any shape of the matter. It's just people that have a slightly different opinion. To your point, it's exactly what you said, and it'll just keep going farther, and it'll be much more, you know, I don't know, but pretty soon, I mean, I can't get the blue check mark. I have almost 6,000 Twitter followers. I can't get a blue check mark. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And by the way, I think a couple of years ago, when they tried to cancel you, they really just went for the conservatives, the Kirk Camerons of the world,
right,
the James Woodses of the world. Now, if you're Amy Schumer, if you're a rock rib liberal, and you make a movie that they deem unwoke,
right,
well, you're canceled too.
Right.
That's how it works.
Yep.
And that's why it has to kind of bite enough liberals on the posterior till they realize it and they join the fight. We're not getting that enough yet. You know, Michael Moore just put out a movie, and there are people trying to yank it from YouTube.
Right.
I loathe Michael Moore. I have written about him extensively. I thought his last movie was an abomination, Fahrenheit 11/9. I think he's a liar, and I suspect that he's been telling tall tales. I've written about this on my website, about multiple threats on his life. I don't wish anyone ill. I hope that they did not happen, but he's been telling these stories, and they're not backed by the facts, and I go into it in my story. I don't want his new movie canceled. I don't want him not to be able to say what he wants. I want it to put out. He can put out as many terrible movies as he wants. I would never say that that can't happen. And I will defend his right to make these terrible movies. Mm-hmm. But there are people, if he makes a movie they disagree with, they want it gone.
Right.
And that's amazing.
Yeah. I have not gotten a chance to see it. I'm going to watch it now just because certain factors in the left are trying to cancel it. And I read a couple of really in-depth reviews of it, and basically what I understand is that he has done a movie that questions exactly what we're questioning, the hypocrisy of the left on climate change. And gosh, there is so much there. And I'm going to guess, and I'm going to go ahead and watch it, and if I end up being wrong about what I guess, I'll let people know in my next episode. But my guess is that he's trying to say that they're doing more harm to the environmental movement than good, because when you have an Al Gore who jet sets around the world, and you have Hollywood celebrities who jet set around the world in private jets to go to climate change conferences where they eat steaks and everything, and then they tell everyone else to eat Beyond Meat veggie burgers, there's a problem there that causes people to not believe them when they say that the ice caps are melting. And there's truth to that, right? I mean, it's like, how can I take you serious, James Cameron, when you're putting out movies that lie about meat, and you're putting out statements that lie about the climate, while you have six Hummers and four helicopters in your driveway and one of your six mansions on the coast that you say is rising? You know what I mean? So it's like, so if that's the case, I'm going to watch it now just because it seems as though the left can't handle criticism of their own approach.
And if they are really offended and outraged by it, maybe they should think about it. Maybe they should debate Michael Moore. Maybe they should say, hey, we need to have a discussion about this. Wouldn't that be a better solution than saying, you can't have these opinions? How dare you? There's a petition out to not only have it removed from YouTube, but I think they want Michael Moore to apologize. I mean, would they want him in a stock?
Right.
You want him sort of, you know, a public flogging? What more do you want, and why? Because he has a different opinion, because he's, you know, he's stirring the pot.
Yeah. Wow. Where am I going with this? I hope he's what you've said. I hope he gets bit by this in a way that says, you know, all right, we got to stop doing this. I would like to see him become more of a Bill Maher. You know, Bill Maher is, I disagree with 90% of what he says, but he is a guy who consistently stands up for free speech and consistently thinks through his positions. And he consistently stands up to the left sometimes. And I don't know, maybe he's the one guy that the left is afraid to go after because he is so concise. You know, if we could get a few more Bill Maher's and a few more people like Michael Moore that get bit by this and then they, you know, come together, maybe we'll get back to having a robust policy debate instead of just getting mad at each other because of the quote-unquote team we're on.
Yeah, real quickly, I don't think Moore is going to be that guy. I think he's too entrenched in his ideology. I will say that a couple of years ago, Sarah Silverman was saying, well, the woke, you know, these woke youngsters, they have it. They know where it's at, and I have to follow them. You know, we can't be these old curmudgeons. And then she got bit.
Yeah.
And she got lost a gig because she had dressed in blackface a few years ago, even though it wasn't hateful. She was actually making a point about it.
Right.
But because she was in blackface, and someone saw it without any context, she lost the gig. And she was really mad about that. And she kind of spoke out about the cultural forces that led to that. So she at least was intellectually honest enough to have a bit of a change of heart. The same with Jim Gaffigan. He's not a hard left guy, but he's left of center. And he was talking about how he made a movie, and it was about him and his on-screen son. And some of the critics said, why is this focusing on these two men? Well, he said, because that's the story. Why is that wrong? You can make a movie about a mother and a daughter. That's fine. So even he kind of realized that, hey, wait a minute. Why are these film critics attacking my film not for the direction or the acting or the humor or the pathos, but because of there are men involved?
Right.
And so, again, another example of someone saying, that's weird. What's going on here? And to me, on paper, the more people experience of that, the more people join the fight. We need more Ricky Gervaises. I don't care if Ricky Gervais hates Trump or doesn't vote my way, because the bigger picture is he's a free speech warrior,
right,
and we desperately need him. That's first and foremost to me.
Yeah, we're losing that ability to come together where we can come together. And to your point about, we're almost going full circle here back to, you know, starting off the conversation when we mentioned Dave Chappelle. The problem with, I think, why so much, well, wokeness in general, is that it deliberately eschews context. In order for wokeness to work as a philosophy, you have to have people at the top of the pyramid that understand that context is dangerous to their ideology and thus weed it out for everyone else at the bottom of the pyramid. So you have this groupthink, and there are people, and there's been exposés done on this, there are people within the woke liberal movement that are very aware of the tactics that they're using. And they're aware that the 9 times out of 10, when somebody is offended by something, that it wasn't intended the way that the person who's offended took it. But they're deliberately stripping context away from situations. And our young people's minds are ripe for this. And then they react to the situation without the context. I mean, going back to what you said, oh, it's two men. It must be a toxic masculinity. Well, you don't know what the point of that was. So Sarah Silverman, like you said, was making a point about blackface, and there was no concern whatsoever about the context of what she was doing. It was just crucify her. And
yeah, listen, this is a two-step process. One is context. They remove it when they want to, and that's essential. But this is about power.
Yeah.
Now, you could say, well, the Hollywood Me Too movement, that wasn't about women. It was about power.
Correct.
They don't care if Biden is accused, but they do care if Kavanaugh is accused,
right,
even though there are different situations. It's about power. If Jimmy Kimmel goes on TV or says a homophobic slur, they won't come after him right now because he is a left of center voice who attacks Trump on a nightly basis. They want his power.
Right.
They don't want to take him down.
But you can
bet
if 6 months from now he has a change of heart, not that it would happen, and then he said one thing that went the other way, or he hosted Trump on his show. Remember, he interviewed him and he got hit for that. They would turn on him at that point.
Well, look at Roseanne Barr. Roseanne Barr was politically all over the map. I think 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, she actually ran for president under the Green Party. And then she said, hey, this Trump guy's got some good ideas. What did they do to her? As soon as they got a chance to,
yep,
they chased her out of Hollywood. Now, her tweet was gross and awful. She apologized for it aggressively, but I could point to you multiple celebrities who have said far, far worse,
yep,
who have faced zero repercussions. Her sin wasn't saying an awful quote or
right,
tweet. Her sin was leaning to the right and accepting Trump in some capacity.
Yep.
And for that, she had to be kicked out of Hollywood after she reinvented the sitcom, after she changed comedy forever, and after she used her show as a platform for issues. And according to Norm Macdonald, who used to write on the show, she would be openly embracing black writers and people of color. She wanted more diversity in her staff. None of that mattered because she embraced Trump. She said an awful tweet, and it was time for her to go.
Well, she went on Joe Rogan and explained her tweet. And I was there's like you said, it was nasty and awful. But she admitted that. And when she explained it, I had no idea that she was on, I think, or some kind
that's
of
what she said. Yeah.
Yeah. Some kind of sleep drug when it happened. Not that that's an excuse, but she basically took full responsibility. And then she explained what she meant to say. And that's what we're missing when there's a case like this, where somebody ought to be able to have that moment where they go, mea culpa. I didn't mean it that way. I take full responsibility for what I said. I'm sorry. You know, and as long as it's not a repeated pattern, people ought to be able to go back into society and make a freaking living. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And by the way, ABC was making a killing on her rebooted show.
Yes.
ABC said, we would rather virtue signal and lose all of that money. We'd rather do that than accept Roseanne back. Think about how powerful that situation is. We're talking how many millions? That rebooted show could have went on for 3, 4, 5, 6 years with big, big ratings. They threw that all aside because they would rather do a virtue signal than make all that cash.
And I think that's going
to not show business sometimes.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think that's going to backfire on them when all these little woke warriors come to full power and they don't have any money because they've killed capitalism. Then Hollywood's going to be like, damn it. There's no cake for us. You know what I mean? So I don't know. We could get into a long discussion about the media and the arts. I'm one of those crazy, boring people that has a 2-volume, 1,000-page each biography of Joseph Stalin. And the reason I have that is because I'm fascinated with people that become totalitarians, and I want to figure out how do we avoid that. And what was interesting was how he co-opted the media. And the media played fiddle at his feet because they got access to his dakas. These were these mansions that he had all over Russia where, you know, they were antithetical to his workers' party, you know, sort of persona. And they had the luxuries and all this stuff. And as long as they played fiddle at his feet, they got to come to the parties and be a part of it. And you can sort of see an element of that developing around that power that you're talking about, that center of power, where the celebrities, what they want is to have their ego stroked. It's not about principle. It's about being someone of importance. And so they gravitate to where they see that power will be, and they'll play whatever fiddle they're asked.
Yeah, you know, as an entertainment journalist, I often interview celebrities, and I'm open to it, and it's fine, and I don't have to agree with them. I'll just talk about their movie. But one of the many reasons why these august publications like Variety and The Hollywood Reporter, why they don't press these stars more on their ideology, on their statements, is imagine if they kind of get a Reese Witherspoon angry, and then she tells all her friends, well, don't talk to The Hollywood Reporter.
Right.
They ambush me, and they ask me these really cruel questions, and you should probably go talk to Deadline or a different outlet.
Right.
So there's a part of that that says, I got to have access to all those exclusives.
Right.
I don't work on that level. If they want to come to me, great. If they don't, I've got a lot to write about. So not that I'm so wonderful, but I'm just saying, I think on their level, there's some, that's one of the many factors in play by not doing their due diligence with some of their reporting.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you've got a nice piece up about Alyssa Milano's Me Too hypocrisy, by the way. I just want to direct people again to your website. It's HollywoodInToto.com. And of course, it's Christian Toto. Your stuff is really awesome. You get out there, you say things. I'm glad that you are as successful as you are, because we need voices like yours in the media, kind of holding them accountable. And so if anybody listening wants to have something to bookmark on their laptop or on their iPhone or iPad, bookmark HollywoodInToto.com, because you'll get the entertainment information you want and need, but it'll also be from a point of view that doesn't make you feel ostracized. So Dude, I've kept you way too long. Thanks for your patience and hanging out with me again. I appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. Love to chat.
All right. Awesome. Christian Toto, Hollywood in Toto. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right. Big thanks to our co-host, my co-host and co-executive producer, Cameron Mills. He'll be back with us, I promise. We're going to do an episode here pretty soon. Also, I want to thank Dynamics Productions in Lexington for their provisions to this program. They provide the music and other production advice, so we appreciate that. It's dxaudio.com. We are on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption, because some jackwagon took the Disruption Zone on Twitter. And on Instagram, we are The Disruption Zone. And at Great Lelando. You can download this podcast at Apple Podcasts, at Google Play, and at iHeartRadio. Subscribe. It is free, and I'm going to do my best to keep it that way. We are getting thousands of downloads a week. It is blowing me away, and it grows every week. That's what's awesome. It's like more and more people are coming to it. So please share it with your friends, because that helps a ton to get our message out there. So please keep doing that. Share it with your friends. Again, it's a free subscription. iHeartRadio, if you have the iHeartRadio app, just search The Disruption Zone. And then once you sign up, it'll deliver brand new episodes directly to your pocket. So you can keep carrying me around in your pocket, because I know you love that. All right. Thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.